What is art without the muse? Many of Western art's most famous works are depictions of women. But who were these women? Do they have their own stories to share with the world? Hello and welcome to Art Muse, a podcast that aims to reshape the ways in which we interpret well-known works of art by paying dues to the women whose images have been immortalized, but whose names and stories have been wrongfully overlooked. While these women's faces are familiar to viewers around the world, their identities have been largely forgotten. Together, we will explore the important lives and legacy of the female muse and appreciate these works of art from a new perspective, through the eyes of the women whose image stares back at us. Is the muse in actuality just as, if not more, important than the artists themselves? And I'm your host, Grace Anna. Andrew Wyeth's Christina's World is one of the most iconic paintings in the history of American art. It is among the prized possessions of MoMA's collection and has been reproduced countless times. Christina's World was the painting that launched Andrew Wyeth's career as one of the most important American realist painters of all time, and turned him into a household name. In the painting, we see a single figure cast against a vast and desolate landscape. At first glance, the figure seems to be a young woman wearing a pink dress, staring at a farmhouse in the distance. We can almost feel the breeze as it gently whisks through the woman's hair and shuffles each blade of arid grass in the field around her. The painting evokes a sense of nostalgia, as if we have seen this woman before, and that we too are longing for the farmhouse in the distance, an emblem of an American past that feels as beyond our grasp as the farmhouse itself. But the more time one spends in front of Christina's World, the eerier the painting becomes. The woman's body language seems both tense and alert, and it is no longer clear if she is longing for the farmhouse ahead with hope or fear. Her arms supporting her upper body are emaciated, with her bones almost protruding through her skin, and her clenched hands are gnarled and gray. A Times Magazine article from 1961 called Christina's World, quote, "one of the most durable and disquieting images of 20th century America." It is simultaneously picturesque and haunting, and leaves us with an overwhelming sense of mystery. Who is the woman lying across a vacant field, her body stretched longingly towards the horizon? Is she moving towards a brighter future or escaping an ominous past? Who is Christina? And what kind of world does she live in? In today's episode, I share with you the story of Anna Christina Olson and the world she lived out her noble life in, the small coastal town of Cushing, Maine. As a young child, Christina showed signs of an undiagnosed degenerative disease that slowly took away her mobility, including her ability to walk. While this presented unimaginable challenges, Christina never let her disability stop her from living a robust life, nor compromise her unparalleled dignity and strength. Though Christina's world was inevitably small, mostly confined to her family's farmhouse in Maine, she would in her lifetime become world famous. When Andrew Wyeth was introduced to Christina Olson in 1939 through his wife Betsy, both Wyeth's and Christina's worlds were forever changed. Wyeth was immediately captivated by Christina's perseverance and self-respect, her exceptional intelligence, and the dilapidated 18th-century farmhouse she lived her entire life in. Wyeth would spend the next 28 years visiting Christina and spending time in her special world. Christina is featured in four of Wyeth's paintings and numerous watercolors and drawings. Christina's world turned Christina, who left her hometown on only two occasions in her entire life, into one of the most famous models of all time. And more than just a model, Christina and Wyeth developed a strong emotional bond. Wyeth became one of Christina's few confidants. He bore witness to Christina in her most private of moments, and the trust between the pair is palpable in Wyeth's intimate portraits of Christina. But Christina's life deserves to be honored in its entirety, beyond Wyeth and the painting that turned her into an icon. Christina was a remarkable woman in her own right, who showed extraordinary resilience in the face of continued challenges. As her niece John Olson Brooks once wrote, Christina should be remembered for her brilliant mind, her humorous personality, her independent nature, and her dignity. Well, today we aim to do just that. Without further ado, welcome to Christina's World. Anna Christina Olson was born on May 3, 1893. Her father, Johan Olsson, later changed to John Olson, was born in Sweden. His upbringing in Sweden proved to be full of hardships. His family was severely poor, and Johan had to share a small room with his parents and seven siblings. In hopes of a brighter future, Johan moved to America to become a seaman. When he arrived in New York, he was hired by a man named Captain Maloney, who happened to live near the Hawthorne Farm in Maine, where Johan would meet his future wife. After moving to Maine, Johan began taking English lessons with children at the local schoolhouse, where he learned to read and write in English. It was then that he decided to change his name to John Olson. It was also then that John, tall, blonde, and blue-eyed, caught the attention of Katie Hawthorne. Christina's mother, Katie Hawthorne, was born in Cushing, Maine, into a family of sailors. Katie's father, Captain Sam Hawthorne, sailed all over the world, his ships porting in Havana, Buenos Aires, Queenstown, and London, to name a few. John and Katie quickly hit it off, and when John had to return to sea, he and Katie wrote love letters to each other. In 1892, John decided to leave his maritime life behind to settle in Cushing and marry Katie Hawthorne. Within a few months, Katie was pregnant with their first child, Anna Christina Olson. When Christina was just 1 year old, her mother gave birth to Christina's younger brother, Alvaro, who would become Christina's lifelong companion. And soon after, two more brothers arrived, making Christina the eldest of four and the only daughter of the Olson household. Christina was a giggly and curious girl who lived a very happy childhood. The family would spend their summers picnicking and sailing to neighboring islands. Christina's father became a farmer who grew corn and potatoes and raised cows, chickens, and sheep. Christina would have grown up with a deep appreciation of her family's land, and her early years felt like one big adventure. And it wasn't just the 72 acres of land that kept the young Christina occupied, but the farmhouse was a world to explore in and of itself. The house had been in Christina's family since 1743 and was bursting with history and energy. The kitchen door was never closed from spring to fall, and Christina would sit and watch the fields buzzing with fireflies and cicadas. From the second floor windows, Christina could stare at the sea and catch a glimpse of the many steamboats that passed through Cushing. Christina had a special bond with her grandmother, who lived with the family at the farmhouse. She would sit on her grandmother's lap, who regaled Christina with family stories. She spoke of Christina's grandfather, Captain Sam, and his world travels at sea. Christina's favorite story was of a particular voyage that her grandmother and mother joined on. Halfway through the journey, the boat was damaged by a brutal storm, and the family got shipwrecked in the middle of the ocean. When they had run out of food and water, it seemed that they had met their end. But Christina's grandmother would not give up on hope, and raised an oar into the air just before her arms gave out. Another boat along the horizon saw the flailing oar and rescued them just in the nick of time. As Christina listened to the story on her grandmother's lap, she too was inspired to never give up on hope. For Christina had her own reasons to wish to remain hopeful in the face of adversity. At only 3 years old, Christina began exhibiting signs of a degenerative nervous disorder. Her gait was unusually unbalanced, and Christina suffered frequent falls. Her mother began to notice that Christina's legs seemed particularly weak compared to her younger brothers, and she sewed knee pads on for Christina to wear to lessen the impact of her numerous tumbles. But even in infancy, Christina denied special treatment. She had a fiery disposition and fierce independence that let little get in her way. When her father took her on a 6-hour horse and buggy ride to the city of Rockland to see a doctor about her condition, Christina refused to be examined. Instead, she stubbornly stomped around the city streets until her father decided to turn around and take the long trip back home without seeing the doctor. Despite her labored gait, Christina insisted on walking the 1.5-mile journey to school every day and joined her classmates in schoolyard games. And she would push her younger brothers in their baby carriage, using their handles as support. Unfortunately, by the age of 13, Christina's condition was only progressing. Her walk became increasingly unbalanced, and her falls more frequent and severe. Even so, Christina continued to walk to school and take long strolls with her mother around a neighboring island. When Christina finished school after 8th grade, her teacher allowed her to continue attending class for an extra year, seeing in Christina a rare thirst for learning. Her teacher even wanted Christina to take her position when she retired. But by 1906, Christina's mother became ill. And as the eldest and only daughter, Christina fell in charge of running the farmhouse. She turned down her teacher's proposition and proudly told her mother that she would take care of everything. Maintaining the farmhouse was no small job, especially at Christina's young age and with her worsening condition. She scrubbed the floors, made the beds, and cleaned the laundry. Her life was ruled by duty and routine. So when a few years later, her friends invited her to visit them in Boston, Christina jumped on the opportunity to embark on an exciting adventure. Christina's younger brother, Sam, accompanied her on the trip. Their journey turned out to be long and tedious. The siblings at first boarded a boat to Boston, but when the boat got iced in, they had to take 2 different trains with several transfers. It took over 2 full days to finally arrive in Boston. But once in the city, Christina was able to tour the newly constructed Harvard campus, with her friends holding her arms as support. She even witnessed one of the buildings catch fire. In letters to her mom, Christina described the strangeness of Boston's small alleyways and narrow streets. And after some time away, Christina missed the quiet and star-filled night skies of Cushing and was happy when it was time for her to return home. Back at home, Christina would soon embark upon a different kind of adventure, falling in love. In 1912, when Christina was 19 years old, she met a golden-haired young man named Walton Hall. One summer day, Walton came to buy eggs from Christina's farm. He told Christina that he was in Cushing for the summer and planned to attend Harvard in the fall. As Christina handed him the eggs and shyly said goodbye, her heart pounded with a sensation she had never before experienced, and she knew that she had to see Walton Hall again. Luckily, Walton befriended Christina's brother, Sam, and they attended dances and enjoyed long picnics all together. It soon became clear that Christina's love was not unrequited, and that Walton was quite taken by Christina as well. he was particularly impressed with Christina's self-sufficiency, gushing to his friends, quote, "She can row a boat, climb a tree, harness a horse, and drive a carriage. She outshines me in everything." The young lovers quickly became inseparable, spending the next few consecutive summers together. Christina and Walton shared a love for learning and would engage in lengthy conversations about their favorite books and philosophy. They would also go sailing, Christina always the one to steer. They particularly enjoyed sailing at night so that they could stargaze from the water. As Christina stood with Walton and looked up at the vast open sky, she may have been reminded of her grandmother's story of hope. And on these evenings, she could feel the endless possibilities that the world could offer her. When Walton left for the winters, Christina and Walton exchanged heartfelt letters with each other. In these letters, they shared tiny details of their lives, what their favorite flowers were, and what books they were currently enjoying. As Christina wrote these letters, she'd often look up at the stars and imagine that Walton was looking at the same starry sky. After Walton finished school, he even applied for a teaching position so that he could continue to spend his summers with Christina in Maine. But in 1915, Walton would spend his last summer with Christina. He was establishing a life in Boston, and both he and Christina knew that Christina was not willing to leave her life in Cushing behind. When Walton left that summer, Christina would never see him again. She continued to write Walton through the winter, but his responses eventually stopped arriving. Christina would walk to the post office every day in hopes of receiving a letter from Walton. But with each day, she was faced with the reality that they would never arrive. Walton had completely vanished from her life. Because Christina was a woman of pride, after it was clear that their relationship was over, she made no mention of Walton again. Instead, she tied the pile of his letters with pink ribbon and tucked them away in the farmhouse. A few years later, Christina received the news that Walton had met a woman in Boston and married her. We can only imagine how devastating a blow this must have been for Christina. At 22 years old, she was becoming all the more aware that the friends and family she had grown up with were getting married and having children, some even moving to other cities. It must have felt that while the world was moving around her, Christina and her life at the farmhouse was at a standstill. And while those around her entered a new stage in their life, Christina's disability was progressing at a rapid rate. In 1919, at the age of 26, Christina could only walk a few steps without support. Her hands began to shake uncontrollably and became misshapen. But Christina's continued tenacity and craftiness is evident in the way she was able to adapt to her worsening condition. She would glide her elbows against the pantry walls to grab kitchen supplies, and she practiced using her knees, elbows, and wrists for the household tasks she once did with her hands. She even figured out how to heat a tea kettle without her hands. In social situations, Christina still adamantly refused to be treated any differently. She continued to attend town dances and social gatherings at her church. A Cushing resident named Luthara Dawson remembered the first time she saw Christina walking into town. Seeing a tall woman with her legs spread across the width of the road, walking in an almost crab-like fashion. Though everyone noticed Christina's arrival, it wasn't just her unique gait that caught their attention. It was also her magnanimous smile that would lift the spirits of anyone lucky enough to be on its receiving end. No one ever dared pity Christina, for she made it clear that pity was not welcomed nor needed, and Christina continued to assert that she was just as capable as anyone else. It was perhaps in the quiet moments Christina spent alone that the difficulty of her disability sunk in. On these nights, Christina would open the kitchen door after dinner and step out towards the field. The sky that she had once looked at with Walton Hall during their nighttime sails was getting increasingly harder for her to enjoy. Craning her neck with all her might, Christina had to grasp the kitchen door to balance herself as she looked up. This must have made her relationship with Walton and all the promises it offered feel as far away as the stars themselves. This may have been part of why, in 1919, Christina gave in and finally agreed to see a doctor. In March of that year, she traveled to Boston City Hospital, where she spent a week under observation. But the doctors were perplexed over Christina's condition and unable to make a specific diagnosis. As Christina wrote in a letter to her mom, "When I first went in, they thought that electricity would do something, but they finally decided that it would be much better to leave me as I was than to experiment. This is what I've always thought myself." In the end, the doctors advised that Christina continue to live life as she had already been doing, and Christina made the journey back to Cushing with little gained from the experience. When Christina returned home, she fell into a depression. She became hyper-aware and reasonably sensitive to the fact that more and more of her friends and two of her younger brothers were getting married and having babies. And Christina felt that her own life path was moving further and further from that direction. After Walton Hall, she began to lose hope that she could find another suitable romantic partner. And as the children of her friends and family began to surround her, she was faced with the reality that she would likely never become a mother herself. When her brother Sam moved back to the farmhouse in 1922 with his wife to have their first baby, Christina became increasingly jealous and locked herself in her room. Her friend even came by to comfort Christina, but found Christina inconsolable. By her 29th birthday, Christina felt incredibly alone. She tried to maintain a social life, still attending the town dances, but found it increasingly difficult to participate. On one particular night, she took a bad fall on her walk to the dance, smearing mud all over her white dress. She turned to her friends and exclaimed in a rare moment of defeat, "I can't do anything like anyone else." Christina must have felt that her world was rapidly closing in on her. After some time, Christina was able to pick herself back up, both literally and figuratively. She became determined to make the most of her life and move forward with dignity. She became an established dressmaker, making not only dresses, but also nightgowns and slips. She immersed herself in books and stayed involved at the church, where Christina became known for her delicious baked goods. She enjoyed having friends over for long conversations and busied herself with housework. And this is how the next few years of Christina's life passed, with an almost comforting predictability that gave her a sense of peace. To help with the upkeep of the land, her brother Alvaro moved back to the farmhouse and took over all the farming responsibilities, alleviating their father, who had developed bad arthritis in his elder age. Alvaro kept Christina company, and the two began to form an unbreakable bond that would last the rest of their lives. This bond would prove to be of utmost importance as the siblings faced the end of their parents' lives. Their father's arthritis eventually confined him to a wheelchair. In hopes of finding a cure, he saw a doctor with an experimental treatment for arthritis and spent much of the family's earnings on it. The doctor soon after was discovered to be a fraud and was run out of town, the family's money and hope both drained with it. When their father went to the hospital for proper assessment, the doctors told him that there was nothing to be done, and that he were to remain in a wheelchair as his condition progressed. While their father battled worsening arthritis, Christina's mother, Katie, developed kidney disease. Christina put her whole self into caring for her mother, who Christina also considered her closest friend. But in 1927, Christina's mother passed away. Christina fell into a state of denial, not believing that there could be a world without Katie Hawthorne. Christina's father was equally inconsolable, and it seems that after his wife's death, he also lost his will to live. The winter after her mother's passing was a hard one. As if in sync with Christina's mourning heart, the weather was unbearably cold, and the house dropped down to 40 degrees. With her mother now gone and her father unable to care for himself, Christina found herself fully in charge of the farmhouse. To fight the freezing temperatures, Christina kept fires burning at all times and equipped their beds with extra quilts. She cooked dinner every night and boiled the laundry, balancing herself as best she could so that she could hang the clothes to dry. But despite her best efforts, Christina's disability inevitably made it hard for her to keep up with the farmhouse's maintenance. Smoke stains began to form on the walls and ceilings from unkept fires, and the house fell into a state of uncleanliness. When on most days Christina's chores felt overwhelming, she would rest herself by her kitchen window to stare at the vast fields around her and stroke her favorite cat on her lap. In 1935, Christina's father died at the age of 72 of a stroke. His death left Christina and her brother Alvaro alone at the Olson farm. With now only each other to turn to, Christina and Alvaro became overly dependent on each other for companionship and survival. Christina was especially dependent on Alvaro, fearing he may one day marry and leave her completely alone. Christina also found company in the house she had lived her entire life in. She could speak the house's language, the creaks the floorboards made, the way the wind would knock the kitchen door ajar, the patterns the sun would make on the stairway. The house kept the memories of her family alive. Her grandmother, her mother, and her father, all of whom she missed dearly. And luckily, Christina would enjoy frequent visits from neighbors and the growing families of her brothers Sam and Fred. She took special interest in the children that came by the house. She would take them to pick wild berries, play dominoes with them, and regale them with the same stories her grandmother once told her. On Valentine's Day, Christina made every kid in town a Valentine, making sure that they all felt equally special. She especially bonded with little girls, who she likely saw herself in. She sewed them tiny outfits for their dolls and shared with them her secret recipes for her baked goods famous around town. The girls would in return brush and braid Christina's hair. One of these girls was Betsy James, who would eventually grow up to marry Andrew Wyeth. Though her years of playtime with children kept Christina's spirit young, her physical disability continued to worsen with age. By 53, Christina could no longer use her legs to walk or even stand. But Christina, strong-spirited as she was, refused to use a wheelchair, instead choosing to crawl. She continued to complete her household chores, and on days she finished her chores early, she would crawl across the field to her friend Sadie Maloney's house to catch up over tea. Crawling across the field was no easy feat. She had to crawl over 250 yards. Being low to the ground, she was face to face with flies and mosquitoes. And in the summers, her hands and knees would burn from the heat coming off of the earth. At times, the trip to her friend's house was so exhausting that Christina fell asleep halfway through. And this is how Christina passed the middle years of her life. No longer in their youth, it became too difficult for the siblings to upkeep the house, and both Christina and Alvaro stopped doing most of their chores. As a result, the house fell into disarray. As time went on, Christina's hands became twisted and were increasingly challenging to use. She would often spill food all over herself and the floor, and she eventually had to give up her second floor bedroom for the living room couch, as it was too arduous a trip up the stairs. Though Christina's world may have at times felt discouraging and small, she could not have imagined the ways in which her world would expand upon a chance introduction in the summer of 1939. Betsy James, who had grown up spending many an afternoon with Christina at the farmhouse, met a young painter named Andrew Wyeth. On one of their first dates, Betsy took Andrew to meet Christina. Betsy not only wanted Andrew to meet her childhood role model, but bringing him to the farmhouse was a way to test his character, to see if Wyeth would judge Christina's disability and way of life. Not only did Wyeth not judge Christina, he was alternatively filled with immense admiration for Christina's willpower and personal pride. He asked Betsy if they could continue to visit Christina all through that summer. And soon Christina and Alvaro, welcoming the opportunity for a new friend, embraced Wyeth with open arms. Wyeth spent these summer days wandering the farm with his sketchbook. He was fascinated by their simple yet full lives. He sketched the kitchen table, the teapot on the kettle, the windows upstairs that were left ajar so that the sea air wafted in. He began to feel increasingly at home at the Olson farm, grateful for Christina and Alvaro's welcomeness. And the more time he spent with Christina, he was in awe of her unshakable tenacity and the immense dignity with which she lived her life. Wyeth certainly surpassed Betsy's test, and the two were married the following spring. Soon after, Wyeth had free rein to explore the farmhouse and its grounds. He would arrive early in the morning, having coffee with Christina and Alvaro, and then spend his day painting and sketching around their house. Christina even offered her old and now unused bedroom upstairs to Wyeth as a studio, so that he could work comfortably. Betsy would often accompany Wyeth to help Christina with her housework. When Christina would let her, she would sometimes brush and braid Christina's hair, as she had done when she was a little girl. Wyeth began to dread when at summer's end he left Maine for the winter. As Wyeth recounted in a later interview, "I remember flying over the Olson house when I'd leave late in the fall, and soaring over, I would think of Christina sitting in that dry, magical house." But it was not only the winters that kept Wyeth from Christina. As Wyeth flew above, an international war was brewing in Europe that America would soon also enter, and all of their worlds would come to a halt. Christina and Alvaro lived through World War II at the farmhouse together, having to ration food. Socializing was also restricted, and months went by when Christina had no social interaction apart from Alvaro. To make matters worse, at the height of the war, Alvaro needed emergency surgery for a hernia, which left him at the hospital, and subsequently Christina alone at the house, for 9 whole weeks. Christina longed for the days when Wyeth would sit and sip coffee with her, and Betsy would braid her hair. But Christina knew how to survive in the face of adversity, and she braved the war and the loneliness it brought with it with the same perseverance she had practiced her whole life. Reunited again, Wyeth joined Christina and Alvaro at the farmhouse to pick back up on his paintings and drawings. In 1945, he painted his first portrait titled Oil Lamp, which was actually not of Christina, but of Alvaro. Wyeth later admitted that he felt more comfortable approaching Alvaro to pose, but soon regretted this, as Alvaro proved to be a difficult model. In Oil Lamp, we see Alvaro seated at night, leaning against one of the farmhouse doors. His face looks weathered and his expression contemplative. His eyes seem to carry all of the many hardships Alvaro endured. The death of his parents, the slow deterioration of his sister's mobility, and the sacrifice he made to remain by Christina's side rather than pursue a married life of his own. 2 years later, Wyeth made his first portrait of Christina. Though they met in 1939, it wasn't until 1947 that Wyeth attempted to capture Christina's unique spirit onto canvas. Titled Christina Olsen, the painting depicts a real moment when Wyeth happened upon Christina in the farmhouse. As Wyeth himself recalled, "One day I came in and saw her on the back doorstep in the late afternoon. She had finished all her work in the kitchen, and there she was sitting quietly, with a far-off look to the sea. At the time, I thought she looked like a wounded seagull, with her bony arms, slightly long hair back over her shoulder, and strange shadows of her cast on the side of the weathered door, which had this white porcelain knob on it. She didn't mind being disturbed at all. Actually, she enjoyed it." Wyeth captured Christina in a private moment of solitude, staring at the land and sea she had grown up alongside. This was the same place she perched herself as a child, the sun gleaming on her face, and stared at the starry sky as a teenager. This quiet moment encapsulates so much of Christina's life, a life she is perhaps reflecting upon as she sits at her kitchen door. The following year, Wyeth painted what would become not only his most famous depiction of Christina, but one of the most famous paintings of all time, Christina's World. One day, while Wyeth was working in his makeshift studio on the second floor of the farmhouse, Wyeth saw Christina pulling herself slowly across the field towards the house. Christina had crawled down to visit her beloved parents' grave at the bottom of the field, a trip she would make often, especially for the wild strawberries and blueberries that grew along the way. Wyeth was so struck by the image of Christina in the field that he couldn't stop thinking about it all evening. The next day, he convinced Christina to pose for him in the field once again. And thus was the beginning of his masterpiece. In this sense, the painting is both posed and unposed, a recreation of a real moment in Christina's life that Wyeth happened upon organically. It also captured the simultaneous tragedy and joyfulness of Christina's life, that she can mourn her parents and also enjoy the berries along the way, that she had lost the ability to move her legs and was still able to use the strength of her arms to maneuver herself across the fields, that her life had challenges, and she showed tremendous tenacity in the face of them. Though the woman in the painting is undoubtedly Christina, evident in her distorted hands and emaciated arms, and garbed in a pink dress that Christina had designed and sewn herself, the painting is in many ways a fictionalized version of her as well. Wyeth also had his wife Betsy pose for the painting, and substituted Christina's torso with Betsy's much slimmer waist. This decision has received criticism, especially from contemporary viewers, who feel that Wyeth was putting an airbrush on Christina's disability in an attempt to make her more attractive. However, Christina herself loved Christina's World. Wyeth worked on the painting every day for weeks straight in his second floor studio. Wyeth did so with some secrecy, knowing that Christina no longer came up to the second floor. But one day, he noticed that the chair in his studio had been moved, and that going up the stairs, there was a path of dust leading straight to his studio, and he realized that Christina had hoisted herself up to the second floor to see the painting. Christina's world remained Christina's favorite of all of Wyatt's portraits of her. It was Betsy who came up with the title of Christina's World, indicating that the painting was of both Christina's inner and outer worlds, a literal landscape of her home, as well as a psychological landscape of her soul. The painting was so impressive that MoMA acquired it in 1949, just a year after its completion. In 1952, Wyeth painted another portrait of Christina titled Miss Olson. In this painting, we see a now older Christina nursing a sick kitten back to health against her chest. Though Christina's expression reads solemn and serious, the work provides a unique window into Christina's exceptionally kind heart. For all her strength and perseverance, Christina had equal capacity for soft and gentle love. Christina loved animals, and it was these animals who in many ways kept Christina company the most. Animals don't judge or see anyone differently than anyone else. With her kitten, Christina could love and be loved unconditionally. Miss Olson was eventually purchased by John D. Rockefeller in Christina's own lifetime. Her family remembers Christina's amusement upon hearing that her portrait had landed in the home of one of the most affluent men in the world. Christina turned to her family and exclaimed, "Just imagine a picture of me and my cat hanging in the living room of a millionaire." Christina's own world had expanded beyond belief. Wyeth's last portrait of Christina, titled Anna Christina, was painted in 1967. Here, Christina stares at the viewer directly, proud and valiant. Wyeth once commented that Christina, quote, had the quality of a Medici head. And here, she does resemble the strong portraits of leaders of the past. We can feel the weight of her struggles, but we can also feel the magnitude of her successes. Wyeth later shared that as he worked on this portrait, he received a premonition that Christina's life was coming to an end, a bad feeling he could not seem to shake. He painted Anna Christina on a day when a white fog crept in through the kitchen door and encapsulated Christina's entire face. The fog that surrounded Christina was perhaps a premonition in and of itself, the clouds of heaven marking Christina's soon-to-be arrival. For Christina passed away just a few months later. Wyeth's four portraits of Christina feel in many ways quite different from one another, presenting the distinct sides of Christina that Wyeth bore witness to throughout their long friendship. As Wyeth later reflected, "In various portraits of Christina, there were remarkable changes. In some cases, you might never know it was the same woman. But behind everything, there was always that strange relationship we had, one of perfect naturalness, excellent communication, without too many words." And by all accounts, Christina and Wyeth genuinely had a deep and mutually respectful friendship. Over the course of the almost 30 years that Wyeth spent visiting the Olsons every summer, Christina and Wyeth established an emotional intimacy akin to family. On Wyeth's visits, the first hours of the day were spent chatting with Christina and Alvaro at the kitchen table, over coffee and cake. Christina would reminisce about her sailing trips of her youth, the books she was currently reading, and even, at times, thoughts on Wyeth's paintings. When Wyeth had to leave Maine at the end of the summer, he'd look for Christina from the plane windows. As Wyeth recalled, "I've seen the Olson farm from the air on the way back by plane to Pennsylvania, and I think, my God, that fabulous person. There she is, sitting there. She's like a queen ruling all of Cushing. She's everybody's conscience." During the winters that Wyeth would spend away from Maine, Christina and Wyeth exchanged many letters. Wyeth would think of Christina often and imagine her day to day, the clanking of the pots and pans, the scraping of her chair against the floorboard, the sea air rattling against the kitchen window. Wyeth's reflections on his long friendship with Christina speak not only to their special bond, but of Christina's exceptional character. In Wyeth's own words, "We had great communication. We could go for hours without saying anything, and then sometimes we would do a great deal of talking. Sometimes I would even wash her face. She would cook over a wood stove, and sometimes she would get dirt all over her face, and I'd say, 'I'd better wash your face,' and she'd say, 'All right.' I became really fond of her as a friend. She read a great deal. Her letters to me in the wintertime were fabulous, telling me of moose and foxes that she would see crossing the open fields on moonlight nights. She could write in this strange, ancient, Gothic script, almost a German-like scribble, in a strangely abstract manner across the paper." But at their relationship's core, Wyeth was in continued awe of Christina's dignity and self-respect that reigned far superior to her disability. And in fact, Wyeth's admiration for Christina may have had more personal motivation as well. Wyeth himself had a physical disability, a hip malformation, which had greatly impacted his childhood. Unable to play and run with the kids around him, Wyeth grew up feeling like an outsider. We can imagine that this gave Wyeth a deep empathy for individuals navigating a disability in an often unforgiving world, and an equally deep reverence for one's perseverance in the face of these health challenges. Christina may have inspired Wyeth to face his own adversities with the same courage and determination she had always shown. As Wyeth's fame as a painter grew, so did Christina's as his model. Christina was thrilled that Wyeth's talent was finally being recognized, but she found it hard to believe that people could be so captivated by her simple life. She could not, however, deny the public's interest. On one occasion, Wyeth even brought the famed actor Robert Montgomery to meet Christina. On another, a writer from Time magazine came to the house to interview her. It seemed that everyone, celebrities included, wanted an invite to Christina's world. But there also came an influx of unwelcome visitors. Art fanatics began showing up to Cushing, searching for Christina. One day, Christina found a strange woman poking around the second floor, where Wyeth had his studio. And the very next day, another stranger appeared at her kitchen door asking for Christina's autograph. On perhaps the most unsettling occasion, Christina woke up to a stranger hanging over her head as she slept. The rush of trespassers left Christina with no choice but to lock the farmhouse doors for the first time in her life. Despite her newfound fame and the complications that came with it, Christina and Alvaro continued to live out their later years together at the farmhouse. Gifted a TV in late age by the Wyeths, Christina and Alvaro would sit together and watch the news for hours. And the siblings didn't just turn to TV for entertainment. In 1956, when a neighbor was leaving town for a while, she left her two dogs with Christina. The dogs brought an immense amount of joy to the farmhouse. Christina would sleep with them every single night, and she pet one of the dogs so much that his ears no longer stood up, the tissue broken down by prolonged petting. Though Christina's progressive disability now prevented her from doing most household chores, she never stopped cooking dinner every single night, using her chair to support her at the stove. She did, however, burn herself on a few occasions due to her inability to feel sensations in her legs, including heat. In a more serious instance, Christina, feeling ill, fell asleep on a rug next to her stove to keep herself warm. As she fell asleep, she could not feel the heat from her stove sear the flesh off of her leg, resulting in a third-degree burn. Never wanting to admit weakness, Christina kept the injury from Alvaro for several days, treating her burn herself and moaning through sleepless nights. When Alvaro caught glimpse of Christina's injury, he insisted that the family doctor come. As soon as she was able, Christina continued to crawl across the floor, defiantly continuing to go about her every day. But in 1967, Alvaro fell extremely ill and began to exhibit unusual behavior. It became increasingly clear that Alvaro could no longer care for Christina as he once had, and for the first time in her life, Christina decided to use a wheelchair to lessen Alvaro's responsibilities. When his health only worsened, Christina decided that Alvaro should go and live with their brother, Sam, but shortly after was transferred to a hospital where Alvaro was diagnosed with stage 4 bone cancer. Upon his diagnosis, Alvaro was placed under the care of a nursing home, and Christina, too old to be alone, went to live with her nephew. The farmhouse, stubbornly kept occupied for decades by brother and sister, was officially empty. Word got out that Alvaro managed to escape the nursing home, screaming as he ran, "I must get to Christina!" The siblings, whose lives had been so intertwined, could not imagine a life apart. That Christmas Eve, Alvaro was allowed to leave the home to spend one final holiday with Christina and their closest relatives. Alvaro died in the nursing home the following morning, alone on Christmas Day. Devastated by the loss of her longest life partner, Christina's world was empty without Alvaro. Christina remained alive for less than 2 weeks before she too passed away on January 2nd, 1968, perhaps of a broken heart. Christina was 74 years old. She was buried alongside Alvaro in their family plot next to their parents. Christina had a small funeral attended by her closest family and friends, including Betsy and Andrew Wyeth. As Wyeth remembered, "I went up there the day of her funeral. It was snowing. I happened to look in this kitchen. It had snowed hard during the night, and the snow had sifted in the cracks and clinks of the door so that there was a thin line of snow right across the floor, right up to her chair and down. It was icy white, almost like a finger pointing. It was like lightning coming across the chair." Wyeth continued to see Christina and Alvaro in the house they lived their entire lives in, long after they passed away. In a watercolor titled Alvaro and Christina, painted the summer after their deaths, Wyeth captured their eternal presence in the farmhouse. In the watercolor, Wyeth paints an ethereal light coming in through the kitchen window, glittering across the many objects that Christina and Alvaro used in their day-to-day. The basket for laundry, the rusted pans that Christina cooked their meals in, the broom and bended metal container, and the kitchen door that connected Christina to the outside world. Though no longer there in the physical sense, we can only imagine that Christina and Alvaro's spirits remained in their beloved home, the only home that they had ever known. Unfortunately, when the public got news of Christina's death, fanatics rushed to the farmhouse in search of souvenirs that they could take back with them. What was left of Christina and Alvaro's belongings were auctioned in July of 1968, just a few months after their passing. Wyeth continued to paint and draw the farmhouse that summer to preserve its memory. He noted how the windows of the house felt like portals into Christina's soul. It was, after all, Christina's entire world. The farmhouse was purchased in 1968 by one of Wyeth's top collectors and restored with the intention of converting it into a museum dedicated to Wyatt's work. When it opened to the public a few years later, the house was so swarmed with so many admirers of Christina's world that it completely overwhelmed the small town of Cushing and had to close just a year after it opened. In 2000, the Olson House was once again opened to the public, renamed the Farnsworth Art Museum, and can be visited today. On the grounds, one can visit the graves of not only Christina and Alvaro, but Andrew and Betsy Wyeth as well, whose love for Christina was so great that they chose to be buried next to her. Though Christina was never properly diagnosed in her lifetime, it was believed for a long time that Christina must have contracted polio as a child. At the time of Christina's birth, polio epidemics were ravaging communities across the country, and the progression of her disease is consistent with that of post-polio syndrome. But doctors today are actually more convinced that Christina suffered from Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, a progressive neuromuscular disorder in which muscle tissue deteriorates over time, especially targeting the lower leg muscles, feet, hands, and wrists, and eventually causing paralysis. While Christina's world continues to be one of the most celebrated works of American art, Christina's own incredible story has been wrongfully overlooked. Today, we honor Christina herself, whose remarkably resilient spirit deserves recognition beyond her role in Wyatt's work. The next time you view Christina's world, think of Christina Olson, of her ancestors, her father who came to America all the way from Sweden, and her grandmother who taught Christina at an early age to never give up on hope. Of Christina's brave determination, even as a child, to never be treated any differently than anyone else. Of her long walks to school, of her teacher being so impressed with Christina's intelligence that she wanted Christina to take over her job. Of her love affair with Walton Hall, who had never before met a more capable young woman. Of Christina's devastating trip to Boston, when doctors sent her home with no answers or treatment. Of Christina's immense heart and all of the children she made feel special when they needed it most. Of Christina's unique bond with Alvaro, a bond so intertwined that they died only a month apart. And finally, of Christina's unwavering dignity and self-respect that inspired Wyatt so much that he decided to be buried next to Christina. Though Christina's world continues to garner split opinions over Wyatt's depiction of Christina, some accusing Wyatt of glossing over her disability, the biggest advocate of the work seemed to be Christina herself. As Christina's disability progressed and she was no longer able to crawl across her beloved field, Christina's world could transport her back in time. In Christina's own words, "Andy put me where he knew I wanted to be. Now that I can't go there anymore, all I do is think of that picture, and I'm there." Christina's world was far more than just a portrait of Christina. It was quite literally her world. Andrew Wyeth once said of Christina, "The challenge to me was to do justice to her extraordinary conquest of a life which most people would consider hopeless. If in some small way I have been able, in paint, to make the viewer sense that her world may be limited physically, but by no means spiritually, then I have achieved what I have set out to do." Today, we seek to further Christina's legacy, sharing her story in its entirety and the magic of Christina's marvelous world. I hope you have enjoyed this episode on Anna Christina Olson. I've included images, resources, and suggestions for further reading on the Art Muse website and Instagram. Art Muse is produced by Kula Production Company. Today's episode was written and recorded by me, your host, Grace Anna. Stay tuned as I continue to share the stories of the women behind some of the world's most important works of art. Until next time, bye for now.